Okay, we're going to start here on the bottom of Kof Gimel Amud Bet by the Mishnah. Ketzad budkim et eidim. How do you check out the eidim to see whether they are telling the truth about what they saw, the veracity of their testimony? Zug sheba rishon budkim oto rishon. The first pair of witnesses that show up, we check them first. Machnisim et agadol shebehen. We bring them in individually. We don't bring them in together. We take in the bigger, quote unquote, of the two eidim, the one who is of a higher stature. Vamlimlo emor ketzad ra'ita et halevana. Please describe to us how you saw the moon. Lifnei hachama o le'achar hachama. Did you see it before the sun or after the sun? Litzvona, to the north, o le'droma, or to the south. We'll get to that in a second. We'll come back and describe this. The Gemara is going to ask a question on that. Kama haya gvoa, how high was it on the horizon? Ule'ayin haya note, and which direction was it tilted? Bekama haya rachav, how wide was it? Im amar lifnei hachama, if he said it was before the sun, lo amar klum, then he certainly did not see the moon, he's not telling the truth. V'achar kach hayu machnisim et hasheni, then they would bring in the second witness, ubodkin oto, and they ask him the same questions. Im nitzu divrehem mikuvanim, then if we find that their testimony equates or matches, edutam kayemet, then their testimony is accepted. The remainder of pairs of witnesses that come up, they ask them some basic questions. Lo sheyu tzrichim lahem, not because they need them anymore, because the first witnesses took care of the kiddush hachodesh, but el kiddush lo yitzu b'pachei nefesh, so they don't go out despondent. Because they don't want to discourage people from coming in the future. Because here, if they show up in Yerushalayim, and we don't need you anyway, so then they're going to feel in the future, why should I bother to come? So we ask them, we give them a certain amount of kavod and a sense of participating in order that in the future they'll come. All right, now the Gemara asks a question. In order to understand this question, we have to do a little astronomy. So once again, we'll just take a step back to understand. First thing we have to understand is, if one is looking down on the North Pole from above the Earth itself orbits the sun in a counterclockwise direction. The Earth itself is also spinning in a counterclockwise direction. So those are two pieces of information. I apologize to those listeners who live in the Southern Hemisphere, Australia, South America. We're going to do this from the North Pole, from the Northern Hemisphere perspective. You just have to reverse it for the Southern Hemisphere. But if you were to look from above the North Pole, the Earth is both orbiting the sun in a counterclockwise direction and rotating on its own axis in a counterclockwise direction. That means when you're standing on Earth, facing up towards the North Pole, you have the sensation of moving clockwise or east to west. Now, that creates the phenomenon or the sensation that the sun is rising in the eastern side and setting on the western side. Now, if that was the only piece of information that we have, then days would be almost equal all year round, and the seasons would change very little because Earth orbits the sun in a slightly elliptical motion. It's not a perfect circle. So there's some times where you're about 4 degrees away than you are in the other season, but otherwise you wouldn't have any sensation of changes in time or seasons if that was exactly what happened. The difference is that the Earth itself is on a 23.5 degree angle. It does not have a flat plane with the sun. Rather, it's tilted on its axis. That tilt on the axis is what causes the changes in the seasons, as well as the changes in the lengths of the day. That is because at some points in the year, when you're on a 23.5 degree angle as you orbit the sun, then at some points of the year, you are closer to the sun because the tilt is towards the sun. On the opposite end of the year, 6 months later, your tilt is away from the sun, and that causes what we call the winter, or the shortness of the days. Tilt, or the 23.5 degree angle of the tilt of the Earth, causes the sun to move between the two tropics. Between that, the Tropic of Cancer in the north and the Tropic of Capricorn in the south. And that, again, phenomenon is caused by the fact that the Earth is tilted. So at some points in the year, when your tilt is towards the sun, when it's the summertime, the sun is, quote-unquote, touching the Earth or on level with the Earth at the Tropic of Cancer. 6 months later, when the tilt is away from the sun, then the sun is level with the Tropic of Capricorn in the south. That has the effect of the sensation that in the horizon, the sun is actually moving. The sun always rises on the eastern side and sets on the western side because of the rotation of the earth on its axis. That counterclockwise rotation causes it to rise in the east and set in the west. But because of this tilt and the change in the seasons, when you look on the eastern horizon, the sun will rise at different points along the horizon. Now, since we live in the northern hemisphere, the sun will always be south of us. We are north of the Tropic of Cancer, and therefore the sun is always to the south of us. The question is, how far to the south of us is the sun? Well, during the summertime, the sun is much further north, closer to us because of the tilt of the earth. Since it's closer to us, when you look on the eastern horizon, the sun rises to the northern side of the horizon. As you move from the summer solstice towards the winter, the sun will start to rise more and more to the south until you reach the winter solstice, when it rises the furthest to the south it will be along the horizon. During the day, the sun travels in a southerly route through the sky because we're in the northern hemisphere. So the sun is always towards the south of the sky. The way that the Rishonim describe it, Rashi describes it this way here, when the sun rises, say for instance in the summer solstice, all the way to the north, on the north of the eastern horizon, then it has to travel the entire eastern horizon to get back to the south, because it started out in the north, then through the sky on the southern side, and then on the setting side, it also moves back to the northwestern side. So it travels, quote unquote, three sides of the earth. It travels the eastern side, the southern side, then all the way back to the western side. Overnight, it only has to travel the northern side. That makes the days longer and the nights shorter. That's the way they described it, but the phenomenon is the same in reality, which is that when it rises on the eastern horizon towards the northern side, travels the entire southern side of the sky, and then comes back and sets on the northwestern side, it spends a lot more time in the sky. That is our summer. That's when it's more light outside. Versus in the wintertime, when it rises on the southeastern side of the horizon and only travels only on the southern side, then it takes a much shorter time for it to traverse the sky. It rises on the southern side, travels the southern side, and then sets on the southern side. Spends more time overnight, where it has to travel the entire western side, northern side, and then back on the eastern side, which for the southern hemisphere would be their summer, or where the sun is spending most of its time, because it's the opposite of what we have here in the northern hemisphere. So that phenomenon has the effect of the sun moving across the horizon from north to south, and then south to north, depending on which season you're in. Okay, that's the first piece of information that's given. Rashi says this, all the Rishonim explain it, the Gemara and Erevin explains that as well. The next piece of information is that when you're looking from the North Pole, the moon moves in a counterclockwise direction around the earth. In addition to that, it's also spinning on its axis in a counterclockwise direction. The spinning or the rotation of the moon on its own axis and its movement around the earth happen basically at a similar speed, so that the moon's side that faces the sun is always the same side that faces the sun. And that's what half the moon is always lit and half the moon is always dark. The dark side of the moon, the light side of the moon. But for us, the only thing that changes is how much of the light side of the moon that we see. Now that has to do with the movement of the moon in a counterclockwise direction around the earth. That gives us different perspectives on the moon. When the moon is between us and the sun, again, it's not on the same plane, because otherwise you would have a solar eclipse, but it is in the same line between us and the sun, you can see none of the moon. Because the sun is shining on the side of the moon that is facing away from us, not towards us. As the moon moves off that center point between us, between the sun, the conjunction, or the molad, as it moves, which is towards the east, till eventually the full moon will be on the eastern horizon, because then it's the exact opposite side of the sun. When it's opposite side of the sun, meaning the earth is between the moon and the sun, then we see the whole face of the moon, we see the lit up side of the moon. Because the sun is shining in that face, and we sit in between them, so we can see that lit up face. Again, it's not on the same plane, because otherwise you'd have a lunar eclipse, but it's on the line, the same line, so we're looking at the full moon.
What does that mean, the plane?
In that phenomenon, what ends up happening is that the moon is always moving towards the eastern side of the sky after the molad. it shifts away from the sun, slowly away from the sun, until it becomes visible to us. And the first part, it's not visible to us because the sun is too bright, and we can't see the moon because of the brightness of the sun. As it moves away, slowly you'll begin to see the moon. That will always happen at night, right after sunset, in the western side of the sky. Now, Rashi claims it always happens in the southwestern corner, which is not the case. And that causes problems in Rashi's explanation here, as well as back on Daf Chaf, and you have to then take up explanations to try to help Rashi. But we'll try to use the Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation over here, and from that, explain the remainder of the Gemara. It is true that the moon will always be south of the sun. Wherever the sun sets, south of that will be the moon. That is because once the sun sets, the moon is still in the sky. In order for it to be visible, it has to move away from the sun or trail the sun. It trails the sun towards the eastern side on the southern end, and by doing that, all of a sudden the moon will become visible. For instance, now, we are in the beginning of Sivan. We are in the first couple of days of Sivan. The quarter moon is now visible. The quarter waxing moon is now visible in the sky. If you look tonight, after the sun sets, you'll look up in the sky. On the western horizon, the moon will be there, right after sunset. A little shifted to the south, to where the sun set. And that's because now the sun is shining back on the moon. The moon is only offset from the sun a little bit, towards the southern side. And therefore you'll see a part of the moon that's lit up, that faces towards the sun, and it's a little south of the sun. Quickly after that, the moon will set. You won't see it very much in the beginning of the month. As the month proceeds, the moon will move further and further towards the eastern side of the horizon, higher in the sky too, but it'll move towards the eastern side of the sky, at which point you'll see the full moon. At sunset, the moon will be completely full on the eastern horizon of the sky. Now, it will move along the southern side of the sky towards the east, so that as each night of the month progresses, you're going to see more and more of the moon because of the angle of the moon. At one point, it'll be in the southeastern part of the sky. Therefore, you'll see a half moon. It'll get all the way over to the eastern side of the sky where it'll be a full moon. Correct. The timing of how much it'll be in the sky. Once it's a full moon, it'll be there for the entire night. The moon will rise when the sun sets. When the moon sets, the sun will rise. All right, so now, what happens is that as you move through the seasons, just like the sun on the horizon moves towards the north in the summertime and towards the south in the wintertime, so too the placement of the moon on the horizon will also move back and forth. It will always be south of where the sun set, because it's behind the sun, east of the sun. It's always east of the sun, behind the sun. So it will always be in the sky. You'll see it south of where the sun set, but relative to where the sun set. So in the summertime, where the sun is setting very far towards the northwestern side of the sky, just south of that will be the moon. In the wintertime, when the sun sets very far south along the western horizon, then the moon will be slightly south of that part of the western horizon. But it'll always be south. It'll always be behind the sun, or south of the sun. That's a given. According to Rashi, because it always sets in the southwestern corner, he says, well, depending on the season, sometimes the moon will be behind the sun, and sometimes it'll be in front of the sun, which is just not true. The moon is always behind the sun. It's always to the south of the sun, because that's how we get visibility of the moon. If the moon was ahead of the sun, we wouldn't see it, because it would set before the sun set, and then it wouldn't be visible at night. It'd only be visible in the morning towards the sunrise, which is true towards the end of the month. Towards the end of the month, at sunset, the moon is not visible. It's only visible towards sunrise because it's already so close to the sun on the western side of the sun, because it's come around all the way around the earth. It's so close that it's only visible because it rises slightly before the sun rises. And that means it's ahead of the sun. But if it's ahead of the sun at sunset, you won't see it because it'll be blocked by the luminosity of the sun, will not give you the opportunity to see it. Now, what the Gemara says now is, this is all to understand the next line in the Gemara, which is, Hainu lifnei hachama, hainu litzfona. What does it mean in front of the sun? That's the same as saying that it's to the north of the sun. Hainu la'achar hachama, when you say it's behind the sun, hainu lidroma, that's to the south of the sun, which is what we just described. The moon will always be in the sky just south of the sun, because it's skewed east right now. By being skewed east, that means that you're more visible when the sun sets. When the sun sets, you're always a little south of the sun. So that means when you're behind the sun, you're behind the sun, meaning on the horizon, you're coming down behind the sun. That's how it's visible, because you're a little to the south of the sun. If you are to the north of the sun, you're in front of the sun, you wouldn't be visible, like it is towards the end of the month. It's not visible. But at the new moon, at the beginning of the month, like where you're in right now, we're in this third, fourth day of Sivan, you go out and look. The moon in the sky, right after sunset, will be just south of the sun setting. The sun is setting, we're closer to the summer solstice now. The sun is setting pretty far north along the western horizon. But just south of that, you'll see the moon. Right after sunset, you'll see the moon. The light side of the moon will be facing where the sun just set. And it'll be just skewed a little south. And then eventually the moon will set very shortly after that. As we progress through the month, it'll take longer and longer for it to set. And it'll rise more and more towards the eastern side of the horizon. Right, so that, the Gemara says here, that Lifnei HaChama and Safona and Lachar HaChama and Doroma are equivalent. And that's what we just described here, that astronomical phenomenon. So therefore, the Mishnah said before that if the person says that they saw the moon in front of the sun, then you don't believe them. If they say they saw the moon to the north of the sun, or they say that it was in front of the sun, you don't believe them because they wouldn't be able to see the moon then. It's impossible in the northern hemisphere. It never happens. It would be in that direction. It would always be south of the sun. It would always be behind the sun in the beginning of the month. And therefore, if they claim they saw it north of the sun, then they're not telling the truth, because it can never be to the north of the sun. It will always be south of the sun, and it will always be behind the sun, otherwise it would not be visible. Right, that's from our perspective on the horizon. That's the way it looks. So now the next thing we have is Amar Abaye, Pegimata lifnei achama or the achar achama is the Pegima. The Pegima is the side that is not light, the dark side of the moon. Is it facing towards the sun? Is it in front of the sun or after the sun? Iamar lifnei achama. If he says it's in front of the sun, lo marklum. By definition, he didn't say anything because the light of the moon comes from reflecting the sun. If the moon is in front of the sun, then of course the dark side can't be facing the sun, because the sun is what illuminates the moon. So if it's in front of the sun, then the light side would be facing the sun, and the Pegima would be away. If it's behind the sun, like it is this time of the month, at the beginning of the new moon, then the Pegima is away from the sun, and you face the light. If you go out tonight and you see the crescent of the moon, the crescent of the moon will be facing towards where the sun set. So you're a little skewed south, and then the piece of the moon that is lit is right where, a little to the north, is like the northwestern side of the moon, which you'll see. Now, where we are in the northern hemisphere, the moon is, or the, what we see of the moon is more of an angle. As you get towards the equator, the moon itself, the lit side of the moon, will be more and more flat towards the horizon, because the sun itself is setting directly east and directly west over the horizon. So when the moon comes up, the sun shining back on it will shine like a flat crescent. The crescent in the sky will be much flatter to the horizon at the equator versus us in the northern hemisphere. Then the fact that we're in the northern hemisphere, the sun is in the south during the day to the north at night. So then, like today, for instance, when you look at the moon, the angle of the moon is going to be skewed towards the north, because overnight the sun spends time in the north or in the southern hemisphere. That's where it's going. So the light that's shining back is coming from the northern side always. And therefore, the moon's lit side will always look or be skewed towards north at the beginning of the month. Now that the sun sets north of where the moon is going to be in the sky, the angle of that crescent will be towards the north. Again, at the equator, it'll be much flatter towards the horizon and less skewed. So now, when it says here, did you see it before the chama or after the chama, the pima, the dark side of the moon, which side did you see it? Said, if he says, lifnei chama lo amar klum, he says, I saw the dark side of the moon before the sun, meaning that it was north of the sun or before the sun, it's impossible. Because then that would be the lit side of the moon, and it's impossible for you to see it that way. And he's not telling the truth. The dark side can never be towards the sun, because then the sun wouldn't be lighting the moon. Damar Rabbi Yochanan, my dichtiv, hamshel v'facha dimo, rulership and fear are his. Oseh shalom bimrumav, he makes peace amongst his constellations. Miolam lorata chama gimata shalivana. The sun never saw the dark side of the moon. Velob gimata shokeshet. And it never sees the open side of the rainbow. Again, obviously it never sees the dark side of the moon, because the whole reason the moon is lit up is because the sun is shining on it. So the sun always looks at the light side of the moon, no matter where. So we have different perspectives of that, but the sun is always facing the light side of the moon, because it's what gives light to the moon. So therefore, whatever part of the moon is lit up has to be facing towards where the sun sets. Wherever the sun set, that's where it's got to be. So if the moon's always rising on the eastern side, and the sun set on the western side, then it's facing the moon. But there you have a full moon. As it moves in either coming from the southern direction as it was moving out to all the way to the east, or back when it's starting to go back towards the sun again, whichever side of the moon will be lit by wherever the sun set. Whatever direction that's facing, that's where you'll see the moon lit up. So when you see it in the southern sky, it'll be facing towards the northwestern side. When you see it in the northern side, it'll also be facing towards the northwestern side, because that's where the sun sets every time. Or in the wintertime, it'll move a little bit. Right now, let's just finish up. Okay, it never faces the empty, open side of the rainbow. That's because a rainbow is only visible during the daytime, and it's caused by the refraction of the sun over the raindrops. And the rainbow always looks like one end is down on the earth, the other end's down on the earth, and the curvature is towards the sun. So the sun never sees the open side of the rainbow, and only sees the arced side of the rainbow. So now, why is that? The reason it never sees the dark side of the moon is because of what happened at Maaseh Bereishit, that Hashem was maktin the moon and made it not have its own light that only reflects the light of the sun. So in order not to embarrass it, it never sees the dark side of the moon. It never sees the open side of the rainbow. So those people that worship the sun will never say, Girei kamishadyo. It's shooting its arrows at us. If the arc of the rainbow was to face towards the sun, then it would look like he's shooting a bow towards earth. So it faces the other way, so you don't get that sensation of the sun shooting its arrows towards earth. There is an additional phenomenon, which is the height of the moon in the sky. It happens to me because, again, of the tilt of the earth and the way it moves around, that in the wintertime, the moon is always higher in the horizon than it is in the summertime. The moon will always rise and set and be lower on the horizon through the summertime, and then through the wintertime, it'll be higher in the horizon. Again, that has to do with the tilt of the earth. The last thing that we need to know is that when you have the sun set each day in the sky along the horizon, the sun is moving by point. When the sun sets, anything that is a little bit south of the sun, next day will set exactly where the sun set today. And that is because every day the sun is moving along the horizon and setting. Basically, the 360 degrees, we have about 365 days. So roughly, the sun sets, or the movement of the sun, is about 1 degree each day. So that means whatever you see in the sky today, 1 degree skewed from the sun, the next day will set exactly where the sun set the previous day. Because the Earth's rotation and then orbiting of the sun causes that each day you're moving a little bit, 1 degree of change. That's what causes the zodiac, for instance, the 12 signs of the zodiac, or the different stars, to move along the horizon throughout the year. Because any given point in the year, the sun sets, and then whatever stars are in the sky are visible to you. And as you move through the year, whatever's in the sky right now, the next day will set a little to the north, and a little to the north, and a little to the north. Keep doing this because of the way that we, again, orbit the sun and rotate on our own axis. So therefore, this is the way the Rabbeinu Chananel explains our Gemara. We so far explained it according to the astronomical reality and the simple way to explain the Gemara. The Rabbeinu Chananel, on the other hand, says that wherever the sun sets, the moon will then set either north or south of the sun. Now that is possible because what I said before is that the moon's always north, south of the sun, that's when it's in the sky. It's in the sky, it's got to be south of the sun in order for it to be behind the sun to be visible. But later the moon sets on the horizon. Where it sets on the horizon will be either north of where the sun set or south of where the sun sets, depending on when you are. Depending if you're moving between the winter solstice and the summer solstice, if you're moving from December till June, the moon will always set north of the sun. On the horizon, it will set north of the sun. Whereas, from the summer solstice until the winter solstice, the moon will always set south of where the sun set on the horizon. Not, it'll always be south of the sun in the sky. But when it sets, it will set in the summertime through the wintertime, it will set south of the sun. And in the time from the wintertime to the summertime, it will always set north of the sun. That has to do with this phenomenon, which is that the sun is moving along the horizon. And the moon, because it's skewed away to the east of the sun, in order for it to be visible, So because of the skew along the horizon, depending on when you are moving, the sun's moving to the north, the sun's moving to the south, the moon will lead the sun in that direction because it's skewed a little to the east of the sun.
Or in that sense, when the moon is visible at the beginning of the month, it's skewed roughly 10 to 15 degrees east of the sun. The moon is in a place where the sun will be relative to the earth in about another 10 to 15 days from now. And so therefore, the moon's trajectory or setting on the beginning of the month will be similar to what the sun's setting will be in 10 to 15 days from now. Therefore, if you're moving towards the summer solstice, where the sun is moving more and more north along the horizon, that means that the moon will set north of the sun, because that's where the sun will be in 10 to 15 days. And the reverse is true if you're moving towards the winter solstice, where the sun is setting further and further south along the horizon, the moon, which is quote-unquote ahead of the sun, therefore will set further south along the horizon, where the sun will be in 10 to 15 days from now.
So in the time between the winter and the summer, where the sun is moving towards the northern side, the moon will always set north of where the sun set on the horizon because it's leading the sun in where it's setting. Whereas in the other direction, when you're going from summer to winter, where the sun is starting to move towards the southern side of the horizon, the moon will always set further to the south along the horizon. And that's the way the Rabbeinu Chanan al Pi Yerushalmi explains our Gemara over here. He says, "Lo'olam eino levana chadashan yireit, ela achar shkiyat hachama." The moon can only be visible right after sunset by the new moon. "Sho'ola klapei darom achar chama safona." It is always on the south after where the sun set, which we already described. But then, "Umatzano dvarim alalu mefurashim etamud eretz Yisrael klashon hazeh." Man detani letzafona. The one who says that the moon is setting north of the sun, dvarav kayamim mitevet ve'ad tamuz. That's from the winter solstice until the summer solstice, where the sun is starting to move towards the north. Uman detani ledaroma, that says that it sets towards the southern side, dvarav kayamim mitamuz ad tevet. True from the summer until the winter. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is because it's going to be important in the next Gemara. Kama haya gvoa ul'ayin haya nota. How high was the moon, and which way was it facing? Tani chada litzfona, dvarav kayamim. One says that when it's in the north, his words are kept. The doroma lo amar klum. If he says in the south, he said nothing. Vatanya, don't you say just the opposite? The doroma, dvarav kayamim, if it's in the south, he is telling the truth. Litzfona lo amar klum. Then he didn't say anything. Lokasha, kambi motokama, kambi motokshamim. One is in the summertime, one is in the wintertime. The way Rashi described it, which I said is problematic because it's not true, he says the moon is always found in the southwestern side of the sky. Since it's always found in the southwestern sky, depending on the season, the sun is either further north or further south, skewed. So sometimes it can be south of the moon, and sometimes it can be north of the moon, which is just not true. The moon shifts with the sun because the moon gets the reflection of the sun, and it shifts on the horizon in the seasons with the sun, and it will always be south of the sun. The explanation of the Rabbeinu Chanan is the way to understand this, why south and north matter. That is, instead of explaining bimotek shamim, bimotek chama to mean summer and winter, it means whether you're traveling from the winter solstice to the summer solstice, the moon will set on the horizon north of the sun. So tonight, if you go out and watch the moon, again, the moon will be south of the sun after the sun sets, and you'll see it. But then if you watch the moon set after that and go below the horizon, it will go below the horizon north of where the sun went below the horizon. And that's what it means. From the winter time, from Tevet until the summer solstice, it will always be setting north on the horizon, except for the last 4 days before the solstice. Creates a little bit of a problem, but we won't discuss that. That has to do with the fact that the moon does not follow exactly the same line as the sun in moving around. The ecliptic is off by 5 degrees. The moon's movement around the earth is in a 19-year cycle that is off by 5 degrees of the sun. All right, we won't get so involved with that. It's called the Saros phenomenon. But that causes there to be a slight differential times of the solstices or certain times of the year. It actually could cause what Rashi says to be true sometimes because of that shift in ecliptic, but it's not always true. What the Rabbeinu Chanan says is always true. The moon now until June 21st, will always set north on the horizon of the sun. From June 21st until December 21st, if you watch the moon set on the horizon by the new moon, it will always set south of where the sun sets. It's leading the sun because the sun is starting to move back towards the south part of the horizon on the western horizon when it sets. The moon will always lead it, and it will be setting further south along the horizon. So that's what the Gemara just said. If he says in the winter time, meaning leading towards the winter, from June 21st to December 21st, he saw it set on the horizon south of the where the sun set, he's telling the truth. If he saw it north of where the sun set, he's not telling the truth. And the opposite is true from the winter solstice leading into the summer solstice. Then if he says he saw it set north of the sun, he's telling the truth. If he said saw it set south of where the sun set, he's not telling the truth. Again, it's worthwhile. Just come out tonight, right after sunset, and you can watch this all happening. It's towards the beginning of the month. You don't have to spend so much time out there, and you can see exactly what we're describing.
The Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot gives a simple explanation of this north and south, which is that the moon, like the sun, moves along the horizon. And therefore, during the summertime, the moon is setting along the northern part of the western horizon. Whereas in the wintertime, it's setting on the southern side of the horizon. And therefore, he says, not sun and moon relative to each other, it's just where the moon is along the horizon.
Tanu Rabanan, Echad Omer Gvoa Bet Mardot. One says that it's two. Now, Mardot is the prod that you use for the ox. Some translate Mardot here as ox loads. Some say it's the size of the Mardot, the ox prod. So he says it was two ox prods high in the sky. V'achad Omer Gimel. And the other one says it was three, Edutam Kayemet. Over there, this is based on what we saw also in the Gemara of Safim, that by, we'll call it one deviation, people make a mistake. So in terms of the hours of the day, if someone says 2 and someone says 3 o'clock, we assume they're talking about the same time because people make mistakes between 1 hour. If there's a 2 hour gap between them, people don't make that mistake and therefore their edut is problematic. Same thing over here. If you have one mardat difference between them, one says 2, one says 3, we're fine. But echad omer gimel v'echad omer hey, if one of them says 3 and one says 5, that's really edutan b'teila. Then their edut doesn't work. They can be mitzteref to edut acheret. This line is somewhat cryptic. What does it mean? Edut acheret. Rashi goes through. That's what it says. Rashi is squeezing, but Rashi says edut acheret means that they're allowed to join with another aid that is closer to them in the sky. If another aid comes along in between them and says 4, they can be mitzteref to the 4 because that's only one away. They could be mitzdarif. In the beginning of the month, it's very hard for them to see the moon at a very, very different location. The moon is only out for a very short duration, that period of time. You can't have that type of height differential in the beginning of the month. So if they're coming to testify about the new moon and that they're telling you such different heights, it's just not possible for them to see it that way. It's not out long enough for them to see it at different points like that. All right, so Rashi claims that they're allowed to mitzdarif with other edim that saw it skewed off by one differential. Versus two differentials. Tosafot talks about whether they're kosher for other edut. Because here they were found to be quote unquote lying because their edut does not work out together. What does that mean over here when we find out? Do we just say that, okay, it's a null set and therefore they can testify other places? Or do we say they're lying here because we don't find their edut to be in common? Tanrabanan, Reinuhu b'mayim. We saw it in the water. We saw the reflection of the moon. Reinuhu b'ashashit. We saw it either through a plane of glass or reflection, I mean, in a mirror, or renu'u be'avim, or we saw it from behind the clouds. So this way, if you see the moon, ein me'idin alav, you're not allowed to testify about it, you didn't see the moon. It's the same way you're not allowed to do kiddush levana if you see the moon in this manner. Chetzio b'mayim, chetzio be'avim, chetzio b'ashishit. Half of it was in the water, half of it in the clouds, half of it in the mirror or behind the glass. Ein me'idin alav, you can't testify it. Mar says, hashta kulo amar t'lo. You said before that if you see an entire moon in that manner, meaning in play in a mirror or through glass, it doesn't work. If you see half of it in the mirror and half of it in a cloud, of course it shouldn't work. So this is what the other part of the paraita means. I saw half of it in reflection in the water, the other half I saw in the sky. Or I saw half of it behind the cloud, or half of it clearly. I saw half of it behind glass. And Chetzio Berakia, the other half in the sky. Ein Me'idim. You can't testify about it. You need to see the entirety of the moon in the sky. This is true of Edut HaChodesh. It's also true of Kiddush Levana in order to do Kiddush Levana. Tanu Rabanan, Reinu V'shuv Lo Reinu. We saw it, and then we no longer saw it. Ein Me'idin Alav. We don't testify. Gemara says, Ko Halchi Chazula V'Azli? What, they have to see it the entire time they're looking in the sky? They have to keep seeing the moon? That has to be visible? If a cloud moves over the moon, then it's no longer good Edut HaChodesh? That doesn't make sense. Same thing by Kiddush Levana. You just have to see the moon for a certain duration in order to make the bracha. If it covered over by a cloud after that, doesn't mean the Kiddush Levana was no good. I mean that as long as it was visible at the time of Kiddush Levana, so to hear, they're going to testify about when it was visible. Why should it have to be visible the whole time? And Rabbi Yochi Kamar, this is what it means. Renu me'elenu. We're kind of walking along there and we kind of noticed the moon. Shavnu l'roto midatenu. So then we wanted to take a good look to really see the moon to make sure that's what we were seeing. V'lo renu. At that point, we didn't see it. So, casually, we kind of noticed the moon. But then when we went to really look, to understand and to see the moon, we didn't see it there anymore. Emei din alav. They cannot testify about this. My taimo. What's the reason? Imor, they're going to say, kuvita de'eva ba'amu de'chazi. Or kuchita, one of those two words. They saw a small cloud, small white cloud in the sky that looked like the moon, and they mistook it for the moon. And because they mistook it for the moon, that's why when they were glancing, not intentionally, they thought they saw a moon. As soon as they looked up there, they didn't see the moon. That's why they're not seeing the moon, because it was a cloud and not the moon. All right, next Mishnah. Rosh Beitin Omer Mikudash. Rosh Beitin, when they want to be Mikadish the Chodesh, says Mikudash. Anybody that's found their answer is Mikudash, Mikudash. Ben Shini Reb Izmano, Ben Shaloni Reb Izmano. That's whether you're consecrating it as a Chaser month, or you're consecrating it as a Malay month. That's whether Rosh Chodesh is on the 30th day, the previous month was 29 days, and Rosh Chodesh is on the 30th day, or whether the previous month was 30 days, and Rosh Chodesh is on the 31st day, you do this process. Whereas, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Im Lo Ni Reb Izmano, Ein Mekadshin Oto, Shkvar Kadshua Shamayim. It's impossible for the lunar month to be more than 30 days. So if the previous month went to 30 days, and Rosh Chodesh can be on the 31st day, you don't have to be Mikadosh it, because it's automatically Kadosh is Rosh Chodesh. You only have two options as to which day is Rosh Chodesh. It's either on the 30th day or the 31st day. The previous month was 29 or 30 days. There's no other options in terms of the length of a lunar month. So if you're Mikadosh it on the 30th day, which means the previous month was Chaser, then you're Mikadosh it, because you're making a decision to make it the shorter month. Therefore, you have to be Mikadosh it. On the other hand, when you're Mekadesh it on the 31st day, that's going to happen whether you're Mekadesh it or not, because the lunar month cannot extend further than that. So Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok says you only need to be Mekadesh it when it's on the early, when the month before was Chaser, not when it was Malay. Rosh Beitin. Menahane Mile. How do we know that Rosh Beitin has to declare it Mikudash? Amar Rav Chiya Bar Gamda, Amar Rabbi Yosei Ben Shaul, Amar Rabbi, Amar Kral, the Pasuk says, Vayidaber Moshe et Moadei Hashem. So Moshe states the Moadei Hashem. Mikan Shrot Beishtin Omer Mikudash. Moshe, who's like the Rosh Beitin, says Moadei Hashem. How does he make it Moadei Hashem? He says Mikudash. V'chol ha'am onim achrab Mikudash Mikudash Minolan. How do we know that the people have to respond? Amar Papa Amakra Asher Tikru'u Otam. Asher Tikru'u Otam Kori Bei Atem. Asher Tikru'u Atem. Atem, you should call it out. Who's you? You is the people. You have to call it out. So they have to say Mikudash. Nachman Yitzchak Amar Elohim Moadai. Heim Yomru Moadai. They have to say that it is my Moed. Who's they? They are the people. Have to say that it's Moed. So now we know the Rosh Beitin says Mikudash, and the people respond Mikudash. Mikudash, Mikudash, Trei Zimnei Lomeli. Why, when they respond, do they double it instead of just saying Mikudash like the Rosh Beitin? Dekhtev Mikra'ei Kodesh. Because the puzzle says Mikra'ei Kodesh in plural. That there'll be multiple callings. Multiple callings means Mikudash, Mikudash. So that gives us the procedure for the Mikadesh, the Chodesh. The Rosh Beitin says Mikudash. The Am responds Mikudash, Mikudash. Belazar Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Im lo nireb izmano, ein mikadshin oto. If it's not seen in its proper time, you're not Mikadesh it. Tanya, Palimo Omer, bizmano, ein mikadshin oto. Shalom bizmano, mikadshin oto. Palimo says just the opposite of what Belazar Rabbi Tzadok says in our Mishnah. He says when it's a Chaser month, you don't have to Mikadesh it. When it is a Malay month, then you have to be Mikadishit. As Rashi explains over here, because because then it doesn't require Chizuk. But when it is a Meubar month, then it requires Chizuk, so people know that it's Meubar. People are going to assume naturally that it's a Chaser month. When you push it out to the Malay month, then you need to make it clear that you're making it into a Malay month, that you were not Mikadishit at the first day that was possible or plausible to be Mikadishit. On the other hand, we have Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, who we met earlier in the Masechta, who says, Ben kach ve'en kach ein mikadshin oto. You're never mikadish the chodesh. Why? Shnemar, v'kidashtem et shnat ha-chamishim shana, shanim ata mikadesh v'yata mikadesh chodoshim. Beitin declares the year of the Yovel cycle. It does not declare the month, or when Rosh Chodesh is. So Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon says that Beitin never declares it. It all has to do with the Edut or Chodesh, they come, and they don't have to declare it. There's nothing about Beitin declaring it. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Locha, ki Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok. Locha in our Mishnah is like Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok, that you only have to declare it when it's Chaser, not when it's Malay, because Malay is an automatic Kiddush. Amar Abaye, Afanan Nami Tanina, that we also have a Tanaic work that supports it, a Mishnah coming up. Ruhu Beitin b'Chol Yisrael. It Beitin in Yisrael, everybody saw it. It was so clear that the moon was out that night. Nechuku Eidim lo yispiku lomar mikudash. They would check that they deem, but before the day was over, they didn't have a chance to take care of the Edim, and they didn't say Mikudash on the 30th day. until it fell nightfall. Harizeh mi'ubar. Too bad. It's mi'ubar. So Mar says, mi'ubar in mikudash lo. When they move on to the 31st day, they say that it is mi'ubar, that it's a full month, it's a 30-day month, and Rosh Chodesh on the 31st day. They don't say mikudash, that the next day is mikudash. Why do they leave out the word mikudash? Because it's telling you that you're not mikadesh the chodesh on the 31st day. That's why it says that it calls it mi'ubar and not mikudash. Mar says, no. Mi'ubar yitztrichalei. No, it's telling you information rather than what exactly they're doing. It's telling you that it has to be mubar, sakadat kamina hol v'ru beitin v'chol Yisrael, ifarsima. Since everybody saw clearly the moon was on the night of the 30th, that day should have been Rosh Chodesh. So then, lo li abrua. We can't push it out because everybody thought it was that night because you could see the moon. Kamashman, that if they didn't procedurally get it done in time, the next day is Rosh Chodesh. No matter what. It doesn't have to do with whether you say Mikudash or not Mikudash. It's just telling you that you didn't say Mikudash on that day, it's not Rosh Chodesh. The next day becomes Rosh Chodesh, even though everybody saw the moon the night before, and it was so obvious that it should have been Rosh Chodesh. But because procedurally they didn't get Beit Din to say Mikudash by that daytime, it becomes Mikudash the next day, and maybe they do say Mikudash the next day. So then we don't have a proof from our Mishnah as to what the case is. This also has nafka minot with regards to whether one misses Yalev Yovo at night on Rosh Chodesh in Shmon Esrei. At night on Rosh Chodesh, when you miss Yalev Yovo, you don't have to repeat Shmon Esrei because Ein Mikadesh Shin et HaChodesh Balayla. Not Mikadesh HaChodesh at night, only Mikadesh HaChodesh during the daytime. So that night, they would never have been Mikadesh HaChodesh. They only been Mikadesh during the day. Therefore, missing Yalev Yovo during the day is more problematic than at nighttime. What happens on a two-day Rosh Chodesh? On the second night, we just said now that it is automatically Mikudash. Since it's automatically Mikudash, does that mean that if you miss it on the second night, that it would be problematic? That depends on a machloket arishonim, whether you're mekadesh the chodesh when it's malay or not, and that kiddush the chodesh will make a difference. This machloket here, whether you're mekadesh the chodesh when it's a malay, will make a difference. If you are mekadesh the chodesh when it's malay,
or the kiddush the chodesh that is done b'shamayim on the 31st day is done similar to the way it's done by Beit Din and only during the day, Tosafot and Sanhedrin on Daf Yudam Bet make such a suggestion,
then the same din applies. Ein mikadesh the chodesh el bayom. And even on the second night, you would not repeat Shmon Esrei. Whereas, if you believe that it happens automatically when it's Malay, then you would have to repeat Shmon Esrei on the second night. Since it's a Machloket and a Safek, Safek Brachot Da'akel, that's the way Mishnah Berurah passes, we don't go back on the second night of Rosh Chodesh. But there is a Machloket Rishonim, depending on exactly what we just discussed here, whether you'd have to go back from missing Yalev Yovo on the second night of Rosh Chodesh. Alright, next Mishnah is, Dmul Tzurot Levana Yulo the Rabban Gamliel B'Tavla U'Bekoto Ba'aliyato. He had pictures of the moon, the different phases and shapes of the moon that he had on plates and up on the wall. Shaban Marea Tehejotot, that he showed to people, lay people, so they could say, oh, that's what it looked like, that's what it looked like. Vomera Kazereito Kazet. And they, instead of having them describe it, he shows them pictures so they can point to them. Umishari. Is it mutar to have pictures of the moon? Vakti Lotasuniti. The rest of the pasuk is Lotasuniti, Elohei Hesef, Elohei Zahav, Lotasulachem. Not allowed to make these images. Lo tasun kidmut shamashai. You're not allowed to make like the images of those that service me. The sun, the moon, all of the constellations that service the Kodesh Baruch Hu. You're not allowed to create or mimic them. Amar Abaye lo asu Torah ela shamashim sheefshar lasot kimotan. The Torah only restricts the things that you can make, that you're able to imitate and make themselves. You cannot make a sun, you cannot make a moon. Therefore, it's not problematic to have pictures of the sun and the moon. You can make things that service God, and he gives an example now. Kedetanya. Le'yaseh adam bayit tavnit heichal. Person can't make a house that looks like the sizes or the dimensions of the heichal. Achsadra, you can't make a gazebo-like structure, tavnit ulam. The entrance part of the Kodesh and Kodesh HaKodeshim of the ulam. You cannot make a chatzer. You can't make your courtyard keneged azara, like the size of the azara. Shulchan, you can't make a shulchan that is similar to the keneged shulchan, like the shulchan in the Mikdash. Menorah, you can't make a menorah, keneged menorah, like the menorah in the Mikdash. That leads to much of the archaeology that's found in Eretz Yisrael, of the pictures of the menorot that they find in Eretz Yisrael, which is, aval oseh shel chamisha, you can make a five-branched menorah, shel shisha, you can make a six-branched menorah, shel shmona, you can make an eight-branched menorah, v'shel shiv'a lo yaseh. But you can't make a seven-branched menorah, because that is mimicking something that serves the Kodesh Baruch Hu that's found in the Beit HaMikdash. Afilu shoshar minei matachot. That's even if it's made out of other metals. So normally the menorah is made out of gold. But even if it's made out of other metals, you're not allowed to make that. That is because all metals are kasher for making the menorah. Zahav is l'chatchila. But all metals are kasher. They learn that out of a klal upratu klal in the Gemara that any metal qualifies. Yosi Rabbi Yehuda Omer Afshel Eitz. He says even wood, he learns it out of a ribui meal. It's a ribui to say even wood qualifies for the menorah in the Mikdash. Afshel Eitz lo yaseh, you cannot make it out of wood. Kederach shesu ba'al ba'chul beit chashmonai. It's similar to the way the chashmonaim, when they conquered back Yerushalayim, they took the Mikdash back. They rebuilt the menorah. When they rebuilt the menorah, they made it out of wood, he claims. Amrlo, mishamra, yeah, you're making a proof from there. That's not the case. Shibudim shel barzel. They were iron spits, rods, say you? V'hivchipum bebats. And they plated them with tin. Heshiru, as they got wealthy, asum shel kesef. They upgraded the menorah and made it out of silver. Chazru heshiru asum shel zav. They got even wealthier, they made it out of gold. But you see here that they were using metal all along the way. It was just a question of the cheapness of the metal. How cheap was the metal that they were using versus how expensive was the metal? But they always used metal. Now, the Gemara says, V'shamashim she'efsar lo sod kemotan mishari. If you can't make them, like the moon and the sun, oh, that's mutar, then you can make pictures of them, you can have images of them. V'atanya, lo tosuniti, lo tasun kidmut shamashai, ha'mishamshim lefanai b'marom. That service me up in the heavens. So that's not talking about the Mikdash or mimicking parts of the Mikdash that are serving Hashem. That's talking about things, constellations, things that are up in the sky. The only thing that is asur is when you have all faces of the Merkava together in one picture, then that's a problem. From what you're saying, that means that the face of a man alone should be fine, because that's one of the faces of the Merkava, but it's not all four together. Alama Tanya, why do we have a brayta that says, Kol partzufot mutarim? Any face is mutar, chutz mi partzuf adam, except for the face of a man. So Amar Rav Huna, Brei de Ravi, de mi pirkei de Abaye, from Abaye Shir Shmieli, I heard, Lo tasun iti, lo tasun oti. When he say lo tasun iti, don't make iti with me, but rather oti, don't make an image of me. What's an image of God? Well, man is Bitzalam Elukim. So making an image of man is like making the image of God, and therefore you can't make the image of man. So there's a separate restriction against making the face of a man. Vishar Shamashim Mishari. Is it really true that any other of the constellations you cannot make? Vatanya, Lotasun iti, Lotasun kidmat shamashai hamishamshim lefanai bimarom. That service me up in the heavens. Kigom. And now it gives examples. Ofanim, Usrafim, Vichayat HaKodesh, Malachay HaSharet. All the different descriptions that we find in the beginning of Sefer Yechezkel that tell us all these different items that are part of the Merkava. You're not allowed to mimic those. You're not allowed to replicate those. The only ones that are restricted are those that are in the upper heavens. Rashi says those that are found in the seventh heaven, which are the Merkava, the Ofanim, all the different things that are there that are described in Yechezkel. But those that are in the lower heavens, Rashi claims the second heaven where the Gemara and the Chagiga tells us the sun and the moon are found. Those are fine. So Gemara says, "Shmadora tachton mishari." Is it really true those things that are found in the lower heavens are also mutar to replicate or have pictures of? Vatanya of a brayta, asher b'shamayim that are found in the sky. There are both chama ulivana kochavim mizalot. That comes to include all the constellations. Mima'au, even above that is mi'allah shamayim is there are both malachei asherit. So Gemara says, Kitanya he, that posuk, which is found in the Aseret HaDibrot, Hayilav Dom, that's to worship them. So there are actually three different restrictions over here. There's a restriction against worshiping Avodah Zarah, there's a restriction against making Avodah Zarah, and there's also a restriction, we'll see in a second, against possessing Avodah Zarah. So what they're pointing out here is that the Braita that describes the restriction against the constellations says you're not allowed to worship the constellations. It does not say that you cannot make the constellations. My sense, Ibn al-Dam, if you're talking about worship, then mafilu shushul katan nami. Even the smallest worm or snail would also be restricted. My says, in, you're right, hachanami, titanya. That braita also continues and says, asher ba'aretz, that's on the land, the rabot, harim, could come include the mountains, gvot, and the hills, yamim, and the seas, unarot, and the rivers, vafikim, and the streams, ugayot, and the valleys, mitachat, below the land, the rabot shushul katan, to include even a worm. That you're not allowed to worship. So Gemara goes back and says, now, V'asiyah greater tamishari, So just making them is fine, as long as you don't worship them, is that fine? Vatanya. Lotasun iti. Lotasun kimoch shamashai. Not allowed to make images of those that service me. Hamishamshim lefanai, that service before me, kagon. Chamau levanako chavim mazalot. Now we're in trouble, because now we have it directly said in the Braita, that you can't make the constellations. So you're not allowed to make the constellations, then what Abaye said until now is problematic. Even though Tosafot in the end says that everything that Abaye said is true. That we uphold all those positions of Abaye. We're going to have to adjust this one thing about the Chamal Kochavim Mezalot. As Tosafot says, Hane Tlat Mili De Abaye Lo Hal Darbe, and Duchol Zimna, he did not retract them. The Kula Emet, because they're all true. V'achi Kamar, Lo Asra B'shamashim Shamata, El Abaye Tavnit Heichal. So that's the first statement we said before. The only restriction against those things that are on earth are things that are similar to that which is found in the Mikdash. Shamim atachtonim, asra chamal levana kochavim. Those that are found in the lower heavens, the only thing that is restricted is the sun, the moon, and the stars. Umedor elyon, those that are restricted in the upper spheres, is dmud dalipanim. Those are the four faces of the Merkava, and of course the face of man. But otherwise, nothing else is restricted. Shani Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel is different to Acheri Masulo, that other people made it for him. So again, here we're talking about there's a restriction against worshiping them, there's a restriction against making them, and then there's a separate restriction maybe against owning them. So what Gemara says is, you're right, he didn't worship them, he's not making them, someone else, and Goy made it for him, so he didn't make them, so he's not in violation of the restriction. The only possible restriction is that he owned them. But owning them is not problematic. Obviously, you're not allowed to make a Avodah Zarah or own a Avodah Zarah. We're talking about here, if you're just making it or owning the object without it being a Avodah Zarah. V'ha Rav Yehuda de'achim masulo. But, is that really true? Owning them is not problematic. Rav Yehuda, where a goy made for him an image. V'armalei Shmuel, Rav Yehuda, shinina. Shinina either means the sharp one or the long-toothed one. Smei en edidein. Wipe out those eyes. Ruin the eyes of this image in order that it's not a full image. So Gemara says, Chatam Chotmo Bolet. There, the image was protruding from the picture of a Shum Chashto, and that has a problem of Chashad, that you might worship them. This is very important. It's going to come up in the Gemara again here. The only types of images that are problematic are images that Bolet, that protrude out. That they have a three-dimensional aspect to them. Three dimensionals that protrude out. Not that they are sunken in, but they protrude outward. Those are problematic. Again, to worship anything is problematic. To make them, we saw what's the problematic in terms of making them. And now, in terms of ownership, you can't own. If someone else made it, you can't own things that are protruding outward because of chashad, that it looks like you're worshipping it or worshipping Avodah Zarah. Kedetanya, tabat chotamo bolet, if the seal of a signet is protruding, asur la'anicha, you can't wear it because it looks like you might be worshipping it. Mutar lachtomba, but you can't use it as a seal, because when you use it as a seal, you actually cause the seal to be depressed and not to stick out. On the other hand, chotamo shokeya, if the seal on the signet is depressed inward, then mutar lanicha, you can wear it, because it's no longer a problem of Avodah Zarah, basur lachtomba, but you can't use it to make a seal, because when you use that ring that is sunk it in, when you press it on the seal, you're going to cause the seal actually to protrude outward, the image to protrude outward, and that's problematic. When it says, "Umi chayshin lechashto," do we really worry about this fact that people might be worshiping Avodah Zarah? Vayehi b'nei k'nishna, the shaf v'yotiv, there was this shul that moved and was resettled, or was destroyed and rebuilt, b'narda. Supposedly this was a special shul that was built by Yechoniah when he came into Galut, and is where the Shekhinah resided in Bavel when it moved and went into Galut with Bnei Israel. So it was a unique or special shul. Tavabe Andarta. In it, it had a statue of the king. Vavu Aile Rabu Shmuel, Vavu Ad Shmuel, Rab Shmuel, and the father of Shmuel, the Levi, and they all davened there. Lochaisha the Chashko. And they didn't worry about the fact that there was an image in there. It wasn't a Avodah Zarah. The image or the statue of the king was there at a kavod for the king, or to show reverence to the king, but it wasn't there for worshiping it. But if you worry about chashto, these images that protrude or that are three-dimensional sticking out, then you should have worried about this being a Avodah Zarah. Where it says, Rabim Shiny. When it's the whole public, then we don't worry about it, because everybody knows that it's there for kavod, and everybody goes in there to daven. They know they're not worshiping the statue. Bahara Gamliel Yachidu. Gamliel is an individual, so why is he allowed to own them? Became the Nasi who, Shchichi Rabim Gabe. Since he's the Nasi, people are always with him. So he's never alone, quote-unquote, and therefore there's no chashto. Ibaiteima de prakim habo, that his images were made out of pieces. Ibaiteima li tlamet avad, He did it to teach or to give information. Uchtev, and there we have a limud. Lo tilmad la'asot. You're not allowed to learn how to make these images to do what the other nations do. Va'atalameid la'avin ula'arot. But you're allowed to make them in order to understand and to get a better understanding. So yes, there's a restriction against making these items to mimic them, to make these images, but it's not restricted when you're making these images in order to learn from them or use them for kadosh reasons, like over here where he's using these plates or these images on the wall to have the Edim testify about the nature of the moon. Tosva does ask that the images of Rabbi Gamliel were not protruding. So why was there a question at all? The Tosfot says, because the sun and the moon and the sky look two-dimensional and don't protrude, therefore, even when you make an image that doesn't protrude, it's the mimicking of those items, and therefore it would be problematic, despite the fact that it does not protrude. Okay, we'll stop over here.